I'm telling these tears, go and fall away, fall away. Oh.
Good afternoon, Matt Rothschild here. I'm subbing for Maggie Dawn, who's off today and tomorrow. I'll be with you tomorrow, too. I got Brian Kelly in the booth with me, and I hope you'll join us on the line at 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-2482. A lot going on today. U.S. Supreme Court, even the far right-wing U.S. Supreme Court, decided that that right-wing lawsuit against mifepristone, the abortion pill, couldn't fly because no one had any standing. No one was demonstrating any injury.
It was a lot easier to go and say no when you got, oh, no standing. That's easy. Okay, I can't just go across that. Okay.
Even Kavanaugh, Alito, the whole bunch, they couldn't find a way to support their right-wing anti-abortion buddies.
I wonder if any of their recent leaked audio had anything to do with it.
God, I hope it has something to do with Alito having to get off that bench. As Jim Santel tells us with his Amicus show all the time, that he needs to resign. That continues to be just an outrageous scandal, seems to me. He has no business being on the U.S. Supreme Court, given his expressed beliefs and given those flags. To fly that flag, that upside-down American flag, or the other flag that was there on January 6th just days afterwards, is it's just appalling to me. I mean, here is a guy who is an election denier who's on the U.S. Supreme Court and who won't recuse himself from whether Trump should have immunity or not.
Yeah, he answered it. The question he was asked, he answered in the most undemocratic, un-U.S., United States, anti-founding fathers kind of way possible. If you wanted to fail a civics test, that's exactly what you would say in the way that he said it. How?
I mean, he doesn't believe in the separation of church and state. I mean, compare that to Chief Justice Roberts, who was really circumspect and very, you know, look, we're not a Christian nation. My Jewish friends and my Muslim friends wouldn't like it. But Alito, yes, sir.
Godliness, I would agree.
So that's who we have. But even that clown wouldn't go along with this case brought by a group that called itself Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine that wanted to.
Oh.
That was
good.
A cute name.
Yeah. They didn't work the word freedom in there. That's very nice.
It must have been taken that day. So that happened today. And then we had Trump on Capitol Hill and all the Republicans in Capitol Hill there kissing the ring one after another, including Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell, who will, you know, I don't believe in hell, so I can't say what will happen to Mitch McConnell. I might make an exception for him. But
there's no one person who has single-handedly done more to destroy the democracy in this country than Mitch McConnell. I mean, he's at least on the Mount Rushmore of, like, direct actors as far as how we got from a normal functioning country to what we have now.
Well, and I hold him chiefly responsible for the fact that I still have to look at Trump's ugly face every day, because Mitch McConnell knew after January 6th that Trump was morally responsible for what happened. He said so in the speech he gave on the second vote as to whether Trump should be impeached. And if you read that speech, it reads like it was a speech written to say, yes, I'm going to vote for impeachment.
And then he said, that's why I'm acquitting.
Yes. And if Mitch McConnell had said, I'm voting to impeach him, I'm sure there would have been other Republicans, including a majority, that would give us a 2/3 majority to get rid of this guy. And he failed his hour. He failed his moment of courage. It could have been a profile in courage. Instead, it was a profile in cowardice. And he knew better. He knows better today. I'm sure he regrets that he didn't tell everybody to get rid of this guy once and for all.
A guy who represents less than 1% of the population.
Yeah, and still
controls the power in the United States. I do not understand that.
I mean, he's going to be like, you know, Colin Powell was at the end. God, I shouldn't have lied to the United Nations about those weapons of mass destruction.
Oh, you think that went bad? You think that wasn't a good idea? Really?
Didn't look great. That's memoir material for Mitch McConnell.
I don't think he's got a memoir. He's going to have someone who have already written it down, because I'm not sure he's... That guy is...
Not sure it's a bestseller either.
He does stall sometimes.
Oof. Those look like...
And that's not... I'm not doing that with glee. That's not a good look for anyone, and I don't wish that upon anyone.
No, I mean, my dad had little seizures, like TIAs, little seizures.
That happens.
It looks like that's what he has. I can't diagnose. I'm not a doctor. He's not my patient, but...
And if I...
It looked like a little...
If I were the Republican Party, I'd say to a lot of them, hey, thank you so much. You've done so well. have a good time and retire. I said the same thing to Feinstein. She just, I mean, look, she was not there. Like she wasn't there. And that woman has had a super amazing career, respected. And I hate seeing people go out like that. This is why when you get to a point, you have to say, I'm done.
There's something about power, though. They don't want to let it go. And there's something about fame. I mean, I was a Cub fan, and there's Ernie Banks batting 150 in his last year. Ernie. Retired last year.
Ernie, my gosh. Yeah. Yeah, there's people holding on. But again, like that's also, I'm calling Founding Fathers again. That's how this country was designed, with the idea, the rule in their back of their heads was absolute power corrupts absolutely. That's why there's a separation of powers. That's why you have term limits on a lot of, on the president at least. You know, there's things in place to go and say, hey, maybe it's time to move on. You can't have all the power all the time. And certain people just, well.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, it's time to do something about that for Supreme Court justices, or expand the court just so that Alito and
Rotate
Thomas,
the
how,
court.
Right. How long can they just set the agenda, this right-wing agenda that is a minority agenda? It's not a majority or majoritarian agenda.
And I think it's ridiculous that a president gets to nominate a Supreme Court justice, mostly because it becomes a partisan issue then, and the Supreme Court shouldn't be partisan. By nature, it's designed not to be partisan. It's supposed to not be partisan. And I've heard people, let's have like 400 Supreme Court justices, or like let's raise them so that we, and I don't think that's the answer as much as, why don't we rotate them into a point where, you know, there's a major and a minor circuit court, and then they go up to the Supreme Court for a session or two here and there, and just see what rolls out.
Yeah, you wouldn't have to amend the Constitution for that. I mean, they could still have their lifetime appointments, but they could rotate through the appellate courts.
Yes, that and again, just I'd imagine it's getting exhausting being there year after year. I can't imagine that it's like, all right, I got a lifetime appointment. The first time, like first couple of years, you're like, yes. No.
I mean, that's why some have gotten off the court. But, you know, and sometimes if I think they're a good justice, I wish they wouldn't get off the court and they'd stay on a little longer. But to have to face the right-wing justices that we've been facing here, who've been lucky to have been nominated by Republican presidents, and Republicans have been lucky to get a majority there when they've had the power to appoint and to approve. And of course, you know, Obama was cheated out of his Merrick Garland appointment, who would have been a better Supreme Court justice than Attorney General, if you're asking me. That's just a factor of just how politicized the whole court has become right now.
Yeah, I don't understand how it's become this way. I mean, I understand how it's become this way. I understand that you know, Mitch McConnell basically just straight up said, no, we can't. We have to wait till the next president is elected. And then 2 weeks before another president was elected, he shoved another one in, completely going against exactly what he said before, because I don't know if he either remembered or not. I don't know. I don't think he cares, because it's all about winning, nothing else but winning. Have to win, 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 and nothing else but win.
Yeah, it's all about power. And they know that. And the Republicans, I mean, give them credit. They play hardball. They play for keeps. It's crass the way they do it. It's hypocritical the way they do it. But that's how they've held on to power.
Yeah, but it's not good when you have 9 Ty Cobbs on your team. Like,
the spikes are out. You know?
Jeez, man.
We got a caller from Middleton. Should we take this call?
Keith Middleton, you're on the air. How you doing, man?
I'm good. How you guys doing today?
Not bad. What's on your mind?
So you guys are absolutely right. I mean, as far as Mitch McConnell goes, it was completely hypocritical to put in Tony Barrett and so forth when he did. That was ridiculous. And he knew. He just doesn't care. It's obvious he doesn't care. It's all about power, like you said. My question for you guys is, how do we go about getting Congress, because I think Congress is the only one who can really do it. We're supposed to have 3 branches of government, and each of the 3 should be overseeing the other 2, or the other, you know, the other 2 should be overseeing the other 1, executive and so forth. Right now, the Supreme Court, the judicial part of our system has no oversight.
Well, I mean, one thing, Keith, and thanks for the call, Keith from Middleton, one thing Congress could do is vote to expand the number of justices. There's nothing enshrined in the Constitution that says we can only have 9 justices to the U.S. Supreme Court. So that's a plausible thing to do if Democrats had control of both sides of the aisle over there.
Yeah, it feels icky.
Well, it does.
But again,
it was like FDR's packing back in the 30s and 40s, his proposal to pack the court when the conservative U.S. Supreme Court in the 30s didn't like the New Deal and they were voting every single thing down about the New Deal. He proposed it, but it was a leverage move and it actually succeeded. We got 2 minutes. Should we take 2 minutes to CJ?
That's up to you, man. That is purely up to you.
Yeah, I have a fantasy that I'm going to have coffee with CJ in Stoughton sometime. So let's hear what's on his mind.
CJ, you're on.
Oh, you guys have courage because nobody else will take my call anymore, but I appreciate it.
I'm serious about getting coffee with you, too.
Pardon me?
I said I'm serious about getting coffee with you also.
That'd be cool as hell. Really?
Yep.
I'm serious.
Let's do
when
it.
When and where? I listened to the debate on packing the court, and that's what it's all about. Because you don't like the decisions that are made, but they're not political decisions. They're by law, and that's what this country was built on. I wish you believed what Ruth Bader Ginsburg said about packing the court. Because if you really want to look into it, she had a great explanation why not. And why would you want to? And, you know, I guess I'm ready and willing to have coffee anywhere, anytime.
All right, CJ, thanks for the call. And I will get your contact information and send you a direct message, and we'll have coffee and solve the world's problems over the breakfast table. I'm Matt Rothschild here, subbing in for Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I don't think we are wrong.
Man, come on. I had a rough night, and I hate the f***ing Eagles, man.
Matt Rothschild here, subbing in for Maggie Dawn on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Thanks for listening. I'm here with Brian Kelly in the booth, who's playing that funny stuff. I just wanted to pick up where CJ left off, and that is, I'm going to take issue with what he said, because he made the ludicrous comment that the current U.S. Supreme Court is just abiding by the law, not being partisan. This is the most partisan U.S. Supreme Court that I can remember, with the possible exception of the Bush v. Gore decision, which was one of the worst decisions of all time and wasn't based in the law. It was just based in the fact that Sandra Day O'Connor wanted to get off the court at some point and didn't think she could if there was a Democrat who got appointed. And she said, oh, my God, when it looked like Gore was going to win, I got to be on here for another 4 more years. Actually, in hindsight, I wish Sandra Day O'Connor had stayed on the court. She got off the court to take care of her husband, who had Alzheimer's, was in a nursing home, and then her husband has an affair with someone else in the nursing home.
Come on.
That's what happened. You can look that one up.
I did a report on Sandra Day O'Connor in fourth grade. I did not include that part in the report. It had not happened yet.
Oh, it's a sad thing. And she, just like Justice John Paul Stevens, talked publicly and wrote publicly after they got off the court in ways that showed me they were still, you know, really valuable assets and their minds were crystal clear, and they would have been better to stay on the court and use their influence there than getting off. So, I mean, there is the flip side of lifetime appointments too, but, you know, this idea that we're going to have Samuel Alito sitting as one of the 9 justices on the immunity case here about Donald Trump is just unbelievable, because he has such an obvious conflict of interest. He showed his hand that he believes that the election was stolen, and he's totally in the Trump camp. And so how can he sit in judgment on that case? I think it's a, I think he's become a headache even for Chief Justice Roberts, who is just a smarter, more cagey right winger than Alito is.
Yeah, let's not give Roberts any like super, hey, good for you. But again, he answered the quest, the basic question. Tell me about partisanship and judgeship. And he goes, that's, we're here to decide the court and the law, and we're not a Christian nation.
Yeah, are we a Christian nation? No, maybe we're not. But then Alito's saying, yeah, godliness is crucial. And there's got to be winners and losers. This contest can't be solved in with compromise. We can't compromise.
I brought this up the other day. Like, that's the exact opposite of what the entire basis of this country was founded upon. Fighting against the idea of the divine right of kings. Because if you combine, I'm the king, I have everything, I am the one with all the power, plus God tells me I'm the king, and God tells me I'm right, you sure pretty much never think that a thought that comes across your stupid mind is wrong or even has to be judged or thought about in terms of this mortal world. So basically, Alito is saying, whatever comes to my mind is what God tells me.
Yeah, his interpretation of the Bible, or maybe he thinks he's got a direct pipeline to on high. But you're right, the founders, most of the founders were rebelling against this kind of governance. They didn't want someone to pull out the God card and tell them what they were doing was right or wrong, and that that would have the force of government. You can do, you know, if you're in church, you can have, you know, the God card come out. But if you're in the public square, that's not supposed to rule.
Hey, Matt, do you remember when Kennedy was going to, they were worried that Kennedy was going to be a papist?
Yeah, and he gave this big speech, I think it was in West Virginia, saying that he's not going to follow the orders of the Pope from Rome, that he's going to follow the Constitution.
Like, we can't follow Kennedy because he's going to listen to the Pope, and they're worried about that. And I guarantee you, the same people, if they were alive today, would be like, Alito is right.
Yeah, if you could look that speech up, Google that speech, John F. Kennedy's speech on the separation of church and state before the election. If you're at home on your computer, you might want to check that out. It's an incredible speech. And it certainly is very relevant for what's going on, and it's in stark contrast from what Justice Samuel Alito believes.
Yeah, I just, the things that people were upset about before, like, there's a stark contrast in things. I see folks, like, saying, oh, we got to go back to this wonderful time when it was back in the day in the times and everything. I'm like, do you know what the corporate sales tax was, or the corporate tax was at that time?
Yeah, if they want to go back to the, you know, 1950s, where the top marginal rate was 91% under Dwight Eisenhower.
Yeah, have you seen the platform from that, the Republican platform at that time? You know what? If that's what you're into, let's do it. I'm down for that. You want to do that? You want to make the Republican Party like that? And that's the thing. Like, what happens when, like, I asked you in a break, that Trump's going to die in the next 10 years, probably. Please don't take that as an A. I wish that him anything. I'm not trying to put any, but actuarially, the guy eats McDonald's and KFC all the time.
Yeah, my view is that Colonel Sanders is going to do him in ultimately.
Yeah, probably. But, like, what are they going to do without him? He's basically made it so that anybody who's even remotely competent is not even close to being around him, so that everybody says yes around it. Look at what happened in Congress when he went to the Hill today. What are they going to do when he's gone?
Well, they're going to be in mourning, and then there's going to be a group of people who are going to vie for, you know, I'm the next Donald Trump.
It's going to be a knife fight or something at that point.
But you're right. Read the reports of what happened today on Capitol Hill. Everybody from, Mitch McConnell, Ted Cruz, everybody saying how great this guy is.
Yeah, and also he said that Milwaukee's a horrible city.
Yeah, if you're listening, you didn't like what Trump said about Milwaukee, calling Milwaukee a horrible city, even though the Republican convention's going to be there soon.
That's good.
Why are they coming to Milwaukee if they think it's such a horrible city? Please give us a call, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-2482.
Yeah, hey, I'm coming to your city, and also I'm going to ask for votes from her. Yeah, this place sucks. Yeah. Also,
Yeah, and they're trying to get votes from people in Milwaukee. I mean, that's not going to work.
They're
going to
be mad that, like, hey, why am I not getting served well around here? I'm not getting good service. The people in the hotel don't really like me. Well, you just trashed their city on stage.
Yeah, I've been tempted to go to Pottawatomie during the Republican convention just because I think there can be a lot of bad gamblers there.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of fish there.
You could get some easy Republican money during the convention.
That's a really good idea. Send the Dem poker team out.
There's money to be hustled there, and that's part of Milwaukee, too, which Trump totally dismissed today. You know, he's coming back to Wisconsin on Tuesday. You guys going to Racine on Tuesday?
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah.
You know what that's going to do? He's going to drive right by my house because he's going to land at General Mitchell, and they're going to drive right by my house on the way down.
Oh, you can get a sign in your yard. Use your creativity for that, Brian.
I will definitely try to.
Take a picture, too. Post it on the Civic Media.
just put it up on because the landing pattern is above my house, so I can just make a big sign and put it above my roof.
Trump, go away.
Land here.
You're not welcome here.
KFC, this way. Actually, I could recommend a couple. There's a KFC by the airport. If he goes there, he will be waiting a very long time.
Extra crispy. Right for Donald. We're going to be back with Scott Ross. We're going to talk about the student debt problem in this country. And we're going to talk about the good, actually, that President Biden has done to try to ameliorate this problem. Scott Ross, formerly of One Wisconsin, now one of the great talkers and great agitators here in Wisconsin. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network all across the great state of Wisconsin, and we'll be right back.
But this whole place sucks. That's right, it sucks. Only reason I'm here is maybe I'll buy it.
This eagle's place is in the sky. She's still got a lot of flying to do. You can see it in her eye.
All right, enough of that. It's Matt Rothschild here. I'm subbing in for Maggie Dawn on the Maggie Dawn Show. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. You can blame Brian for that music. I've got...
That's John Ashcroft.
Oh, God.
You give respect.
That's a flashback that I didn't need to have. I'm going to be joined by Scott Ross, formerly of One Wisconsin Now, one of Wisconsin's best voices and agitators for the progressive cause. Scott, how are you?
I am great, Matt. It's terrific to be here. And Brian, you have now earwormed me, and I will pay you back for that.
I look forward to it, and thank you so much.
We also
so you know it's coming.
We also have on the line, we have Joe from Madison, and I've been listening to the Civic Media Radio Network for a long time, and Joe is one of the best callers ever to call in with the most thoughtful points. So you're up to bat, Joe. What's on your mind?
You guys are wonderful, and I appreciate how you. I know that you'll take this discussion in some interesting areas. Apparently, a convicted felon, Mr. Trump, when speaking to a Republican this morning, described our dear city of Milwaukee, which is going to be the site of the Republican convention, as, quote, a horrible place. What was fascinating was the dancing, kind of like rats on top of a hot stove, a lot of cha-cha activity of the various Republicans when trying to be faced with this less than gracious description of our city. One person said that it was about a debate over protests. It wasn't about Milwaukee itself. Glenn Grothman said, well, it was about elections in Milwaukee, which of course we know has been settled. And Van Orton, Mr. Chugalug, as we have called him in the past, said it was due to the crime rate in Milwaukee. So what I find fascinating about this is that as I look, it was 2 days ago, I believe, that the FBI just dropped crime rate statistics comparing the first quarter of 2024 to the last quarter of 2023. FBI rates are that the crime and murder rate across the country is down 26%. Rape is down 25%. Robbery is down 17%. Under Biden, things are looking pretty good. So I know that you will take this in some fine ways. I love the fact that you describe the city where the convention is going to be as horrible. And how should we all react to that? So have fun, you guys. Take care.
All right, thanks, Joe from Madison, for that sweet call. You know, filing false business records, I think that's up, though. That should be reflected in those FBI figures. Scott Ross, what did you think about Trump's comment about Milwaukee?
Well, I just wanted to say, I almost got here a little bit late. I could have blamed it on technology, but I'll be very honest. And that is, you know, I don't know if you know it, but it's Trump's 79th or 78th birthday tomorrow, Flag Day. And it's also my birthday. And Trump and I have a tradition of getting together to celebrate Fighting Bob La Follette's birthday. And I made us reservations to get together in Milwaukee, but, you know, I have to change that now because obviously we can't go to that horrible city, quote unquote. So, yeah, I was going to say, I think we're up to four. I mean, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel had reported four different reasons, rationales for why Republicans trying to explain away Trump calling Milwaukee a horrible city, you know, the best of which being the fifth reason, which is Brian Stile just lying and saying that it didn't happen. You know, that's what Brian, you know, Derek Van Orten saying it's because of crime. Glenn Grothman was saying because it's elections, the yeah. election running. RNC was saying it's because they're mad about the park, the situation with like having protesters actually be within the zip code of where the convention is being held. I think that was three. And then what was the fourth one? I can't recall what the fourth one was, but you know, you should have at least, you know, you should maybe get it down to two reasons why he said Milwaukee is a horrible city.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just goes to show.
You know, the apologists can't get their apologies straight. So that's what happens when you're a bunch of sycophants. But Grothman, to my mind, might have been the worst just because he keeps peddling this lie about this, about the last election. And, you know, that's just a lie that they won't give up. Scott, I had you on. I wanted to get you on to talk about student debt. And I just want to give a little background on the subject because Maggie Dawn is just doing a great job here on the Maggie Dawn Show telling people that actually, you know, when they hear that Joe Biden's done nothing for you, actually Joe Biden's done a lot for a lot of people. And she's got this 100 things Biden has done right, one a day here. And today we were going to talk about student debt. So I just want to set the table a little bit. And the problem is that student debt, and this isn't Biden's fault, but it ballooned by about 150% from 2007 to 2020. And during that period, there's a lot of wage stagnation, so people were really taking a hit on it. And it drastically reduced their amount of disposable income and impaired their ability even to think about buying a house. So, you know, this has been a huge problem for just a tremendous number of Americans. And here's a fact that people just don't get very often. Biden has done more to cancel student debt than any other president in our history. Of course, he first tried to cancel student debt for 43 million borrowers under the HEROES Act, but the U.S. Supreme Court, that right-wing Supreme Court, shut that down. Biden didn't take no for an answer. He's used existing programs to cancel student loans of 4,750,000 borrowers, including 61,400 in Wisconsin. So I'll give that to you again because I stumbled. Biden has used existing programs to cancel the student loans of 4,750,000 borrowers, including 61,400 here in Wisconsin. Scott, you've been on this issue before anyone I know, and you did more to throw a spotlight on it more than anyone else in Wisconsin, certainly. What is your take on what Biden has done on the student debt problem? I'm sorry, Scott, we're not hearing you just yet. Now we are. Go.
All right. Okay. You know, I want to just thank you for recognizing the work that One Wisconsin Now did, making issue of the student debt crisis. And I just want to tell you how long ago it was, and it wasn't that long ago, is that when we started, student debt was $1 trillion. It's now $2 trillion. Oof. And thank you, President Biden has done and tried to do real work to relieve borrowers because, you know, student debt, you know, getting a pension is the pathway to, or technical college is a pathway to the middle class. It shouldn't be a multiple decade debt sentence. And the fact is that, as you say, President Biden, Vice President Harris have provided relief, student loan relief to 4.75 million borrowers, and they have that relief that would bring the total to over $30 million. And again, I think that when you look at a crisis, and it is a crisis, you know, we have a system that keeps people from being able to achieve their dreams. You know, and the fact is that student debt is preventing people from being able to fully participate in the American economy. Buying a new car, these are the purchases which made you middle class and which drove our economy. And student loans specifically having those, we know that because of science that was done on, you know, that we did 15 years ago to point that back out. And the fact is that student debt isn't just pernicious, you know, in the ways, you know, that you would normally think, but it's pernicious in terms of it targets certain communities even more unfairly than other things. You know, women and people of color have more student debt than, you know, whites like I did. I had $65,000 of debt, interest rate of 7.5%, you know? And I used to joke that when in my 30s, because of my student debt, I had one car.
Scott, we're a little, excuse me for interrupting. We're getting some bad audio. So we're going to, no, don't worry. We're going to have you call in or we'll call you and we'll get you just on an old phone line and we'll continue the conversation.
That.
No worries at all. You've got important stuff to say and I want people to be able to hear it. And I loved your line about the multiple decade debt sentence that so many Americans are facing. That's Scott Ross, who did such pioneering work on this issue at One Wisconsin Now, he's going to rejoin us shortly by phone. He also has a curse to share a birthday with Donald Trump, of all things. I can't imagine what a pull that has on that. Scott, do we have you by phone, or can you join us now just on the phone?
Yep, I'm there if you're there.
Yeah, loud and clear. So, Biden's tried to do, seems to me, the best he can to try to address this problem, which he campaigned on, and there was pressure on him to keep his campaign promise. To my mind, he tried keeping his campaign promise, and the U.S. Supreme Court said no, but he's kept trying, including, you know, in April when he was in Madison, he unveiled another program that's going to help 25 million borrowers. So it's not like he's given up on this. How would you evaluate it?
No, I mean, I can't tell you how awesome it was because he did his event at MATC, and I live right next to MATC Truex campus. So I got to go down the street to see my president talk about an issue that I really care about and how he wants to bring relief to people. And I think as important as it is that, you know, President Biden has tried to and brought real relief to student loan borrowers, as you said, he has been thwarted by the conservative controlled Supreme Court that has thwarted some of those efforts for ridiculous reasons. And he's also been prevented, you know, because of Republican obstructionism. And that goes back to, you know, Senator Baldwin and Representative Pocan, and back to Representative Ron Klein, they all supported legislation to allow you to refinance your student loan like you can a mortgage. You know, banks can go, you know, Eric Hovde can get, you know, borrow money from his bank at 0.75% interest, but I'm going to pay 7.875% interest for my student loans. You know, and that's just absolutely ridiculous. But that sort of hypocrisy is endemic in this. And I can point to no other person more clearly and more deserving of scorn related to student debt in the state of Wisconsin than our speaker, Robin Voss, who received $297,600 in PPP loans. And those were all forgiven, those socialist forgiving of his loans. And he specifically opposes doing anything related to student loan borrowers. And I got to take my hat off to the president and his team, because they have blistered the Republican members of Congress who came out against student loan forgiveness and student loan reform, but who got massive PPP loans, like Matt Gaetz, who got $500,000. Marjorie Taylor Greene got $180,000. You got this clown from Oklahoma, the Senator Mark Wayne Mullen. You may remember him. He got into the fight with Sean Fain from the UAW. He got $1 million in student loans, PPP loans. These were all loans that were forgiven. 96% of the nearly $800 billion in PPP loans were forgiven. Was that good? Absolutely. But what is the difference between a student loan or a tech college loan and that sort of thing, especially given the fact that the reason student loan debt has gone up is because state and federal government stopped investing in the things that made higher education affordable to the middle class. Pell grants, financial aid, investing in, you know, I'll say in the state of Wisconsin. Back in 1990, before Tommy, you know, in the midst of Tommy Thompson's boom for prison spending, we used to spend 10 cents of every general purpose revenue dollar on higher education. Under Walker, it was 2.3 cents. See exactly what happens. We paid for prisons instead of paying for education.
That's Scott Ross, who's done a tremendous amount of work on the student debt issue. Scott, how do you answer critics, and I hear these all the time on right-wing radio, who say, you know, the student debt relief, it's unfair to those who already repaid their loans?
Well, let me just say this. I had student debt for 26 years, and I made my final payment on my 44th birthday. And I'll just say this. Both of my parents died of cancer, and if we cure cancer, I'm not going to want people not to get that treatment because my parents died of it. It's just a ridiculous argument. It is un-American. We are not that as a people. We are compassionate, knowing, needy people, and we stand up for each other. We stand up for our brothers and sisters. And the fact is, we pay for a lot of stuff. We can certainly help finance an education system that has been skewed so remarkably bad in terms of what we used to pay and what we pay now. And you and I know that because I was on the beginning of it, and you were, you know, a little bit before, and probably it was a lot more affordable for both of us than it is now, that's for sure.
Scott, if you can hang on, I'd love to talk with you a little more just right past the break. I'm talking with Scott Ross. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm subbing in here for Maggie Dawn on the Maggie Dawn Show. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network all across the state of Wisconsin.
Only God, no other kings. Let the
freedom. Matt Rothschild back with you on the Maggie Dawn Show. Maggie's off today and tomorrow, so I'll be with you tomorrow, too, if you can handle it. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm speaking with Scott Ross right now about the issue of student debt. And President Biden has done really an amazing thing to try to alleviate student debt. He tried to cancel the debt of 43 million borrowers, but the U.S. Supreme Court, right-wing as it is, wouldn't let him do that. So he's managed to cancel the student loans of 4,750,000 borrowers using existing programs, including 61,400 right here in Wisconsin. Scott Ross, I also wanted to ask you about another criticism. This came from, of all people, James Carville the other day. He echoed this common criticism of the student loan forgiveness plan. He said it's unfair to those who don't go to college, and he had a corollary saying it's only going to help those Ivy League rich kids anyway.
Well, when James Carville went to college back in the 1940s, you basically got paid to go to college. You know, let's not kid ourselves. You basically got paid. And if you didn't need some money, you could go work in the factory where your old man worked over the summer, you know, like we used to be able to do in Pittsburgh. I was before me because the industry was gone by then, but you'd go work there and you had all your money for the year, you know, for where you lived and your food and you know, whatever. You didn't need a computer then. You didn't need internet service then. You didn't need a phone then. You know, these are things that people need now to be and participate fully in the college, you know, in college experience, whatever. The point is that, like, if you have we are at a point right now, if you have a student debt, you're not rich. It's as simple as that. Nobody who has student loans is rich. There may be people who are going to medical school who may down the road have money. But just remember, the reason we have a crisis in rural Wisconsin where we don't have dentists and doctors is because people can't afford to go practice there because they can't afford the salaries because of student loans, because of having $300,000 or $400,000 of student debt. So, I think James Carville, there's some things he's been very correct on this one. He is dead wrong. Could not be worse. And the fact is, here's how you know that being on the right side of the student debt crisis is trying to solve it. Because, you know, a guy like Trump, he tried to kill the public service loan forgiveness program. He proposed freezing Pell grants. He, you know, the predatory for-profit colleges, he stopped efforts to make them more accountable, whereas Joe Biden realizes the scam that they were. You know, there were these for-profit colleges were basically domestic war profiteers whose, you know, there were times where 70, 80, 90% of the revenue was from the GI Bill.
Yeah.
You know?
I just want to add on to that. I mean, Biden, when he was here in Madison, you know, in April, he proposed canceling the student debt of borrowers who went to those fly-by-night schools that lost accreditation that you're talking about right now.
Exactly. And again, so many of those schools in particular target members of the military who are returning, and they target poor people. With Vulture, they're not just operations that like steal your money. They are high pressure sales operations that get you locked in, and then you get a worthless degree for the most part. When all you're trying to do is play by the rules, you know, borrowers aren't asking for a handout. They took on responsibility. They're willing to fight through this responsibility. They just want to be treated fairly in a system that doesn't treat them fairly. And if I just may interject politics in this, because I love the fact when you have an issue that works both as a policy standpoint, it's great policy, and it's great politics, and student loan debt is. And I think that the Democrats, by and large, have not taken the full opportunity of this because they're afraid of things like, well, you know, somebody didn't go to college, they have to pay for this. You know, the fact is that student loan borrowers are the demographic, that's 45 million people out there, are the demographic that's most likely to be voters in America, in American elections. They are most likely to be voters because they have an education. And by and large, you know, people without college degrees vote, but a higher percentage of people, you know, who have technical college training and college and university training absolutely vote. And so you're talking about a demographic that's going to go to the polls. And there are a lot of jerks in this country, Matt. You and I, you know, hey, I'm one of them, right? you and I may know some, but there is no one who was going to go vote for a Democrat, but because they're supporting student loan reform, they're suddenly going to go flip and write the Republicans. If somebody's issue is so that they want to go and vote against you, you never had a chance. The Democrats never had a chance with them anyhow. And that's the simple fact of it. Whereas student loan borrowers, those 45 million, they get a monthly reminder that they're in a system that's treating them unfairly, and you have that opportunity to mobilize them. So it's a great policy. It's a great politics from where I stand.
Scott Ross, you're no jerk. How would you mobilize? And you're a great political strategist. So how do you mobilize these folks?
I mean, what you have to do is you have to fight them. You have to fight the Republican hypocrisy on it. You know, Democrats in the legislature should be lighting up Robin Voss for the fact that he took a PPP loan and now says we can't do anything on student loan debt. And the same thing with the other members of Congress. We should be going after them. You know, Eric Hovde, for God's sakes, the guy is a $3 billion bank owner. You know, don't tell me he's protecting student loan borrowers. Again, a guy who can get money from the federal government because he's a bank at 0.75% interest. And if he's doling out interest rates for student loans at, you know, oftentimes 7, 8, 9, 10, 12%. You know, that's the fact. I think you have to go on that thing of like, you know, this is how the American economy works. People invest in it and you get the job training needed to, you know, have the business to create jobs, to be a capable in the workforce. These are things that make the economy grow. And student debt is not the same student debt that it was 5 years ago or 10 years ago or 20 years ago, certainly not 20 years ago. And that's where I think that's how you fight it. You mobilize the voters. We're in it for you. Here's what we're trying to do. Remind them. They're going to get the payments. You know, what is it? It's what month is it? It's June, right? Because my birthday is this month. See, I'm getting older. I can't remember. So you still got a payment in June, July, August, September, October. You got 5 months. Every month you can remind these people that Democrats are trying to do something about this. Trump and the Republicans are stopping it.
Yeah, that's Scott Ross of One Wisconsin Now. Thanks for being on today, Scott, on the Maggie Dawn Show. Really appreciate your insights.
Terrific to be on. Terrific to see you. And boo to Brian on his choice of music earlier.
I can't agree with you more on that. And I do just want to reinforce, this is one issue where President Biden has done a lot for a lot of Americans in need. 4,750,000 borrowers have gotten their student loans canceled in 61,400 in Wisconsin. So when people say, what's Joe Biden done? Here's one thing you can point to. And there are 100 things, as Maggie Dawn has been showing on her tremendous Maggie Dawn show. I'm subbing for her today and tomorrow. I'm Matt Rothschild. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
Communicating, keeping up foreign relations. I was, giving him the bird.